We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
92.9 FM ESPN presents the area's only national columnist who spends his afternoons bringing unique perspective to Memphis radio. He'll make you think. He'll make you laugh. He'll sometimes make you change the station if children are around. And he apologizes in advance for that. It's 4 o'clock. Let's get into it. This is the Gary Parrish Show.
I'm here. My name's Gary Parrish, speaking to you from Memphis, Tennessee. Ben Adolph's producing the program. Glad he's with me. Glad you're with me. Hope you're getting through the day best you can. Daddy lost most everything. On horse, whiskey, and Wendry. And I hope you didn't cut out early yesterday. I hope you were here for dinner to go when Big Bet Bennett told you. Get the Celtics plus 3.5. Was it looking good for three quarters? No, but that's the thing. Doesn't have to look good for three quarters. Just has to look good at the end. And it looked good at the end. A historically dominant fourth quarter from the Boston Celtics on the road against the Golden State Warriors. So now Boston is just 1, 2, 3 more victories away from getting their 18th NBA championship, which would be a record. We'll talk about it momentarily. First, though, quickly, let me set this afternoon's schedule for you. 4:20, Dan Wolkin's going to join me, National Columnist USA Today. I'll talk to him about the NBA Finals and various other topics. Wolkin going to be here in the next segment. Finish that, take a break, come back, do four notable stories at 4:44, at which point we're going to discuss four previously undiscussed stories. Among them, according to court documents, Cleveland quarterback Deshaun Watson offered $100,000 each to all 22 women who have filed civil suits against him. This reportedly happened last October. For the deal to go through, all 22 women, it's 23 now, by the way, but at the time it was 22, all 22 women had to take the money and sign a non-disclosure agreement. 18 agreed to do it, 4 did not. So no deal. I'll tell you more about it around 4:44. Met star Francisco Lindor injured himself by slamming his finger in a hotel door. It's always something. You know, it's always something. Mm-hmm. Get into that a little later on this hour. The Philadelphia Phillies fired Joe Girardi earlier today. Was it the right move? We'll discuss just before 5 o'clock. And does Amber Heard even have $8 million to give to Johnny Depp? Her attorney was asked that question this morning. I'll tell you what she said during four notable stories at 4:44. 5 o'clock, Jeff Calkins, just like always. Then I will eventually do dinner to go. Got a Dateline preview.
Okay.
This is a wild one.
Oh, good, good. I was scared.
Now, it's a one-hour special.
Ooh.
This is not a two-hour special.
Interesting.
This is a one-hour special.
I'm intrigued.
But it's a wild story. It's a sad story. They're all sad stories. But it's a wild one, too.
Okay.
So we'll do that during dinner to go, and then we'll get on out of here. So that's the rundown. We got a lot to get to, but I did want to start with the NBA Finals because Game 1 was last night inside Chase Center, San Francisco, California. Wild game, fun game, final score. Celtics 120, Warriors 108. Golden State actually led by 15 points late in the third quarter and by 12 heading into the fourth quarter, but Boston closed incredibly. The Celtics outscored the Warriors 40-16 in the fourth, turned a 12-point deficit into a 12-point win in a span of just 12 minutes. It was the most lopsided fourth quarter, 40-16, 24-point fourth quarter win. Most lopsided fourth quarter in NBA Finals history, and it allowed Boston to become the first team in NBA Finals history to trail by double digits entering the fourth, but then win by double digits. Big Bet Bennett, you gave us Boston plus 3.5 last night. Were you nervous heading into the fourth? Were you ecstatic every minute of the fourth?
I wasn't super nervous just because when they came out and the Warriors just hit them with that barrage of threes, like Steph's hitting threes, Clay's hitting threes, they get up on them early in the game and Boston comes back and then they actually have the lead at halftime. I was like, okay, these dudes are built for it. Like they can overcome what the Warriors do, which is hit you with these gauntlets of threes, right? Like they just go on these runs and you got to weather the storm and get through it. And I think Boston's built for it, dude.
What I hear in your voice is that you kept your composure.
I kept my composure.
Just like the Celtics.
Yeah, exactly.
Maintained their composure. I thought the Celtics would make a run at it in the fourth. The idea that you would come from 12 points down on the road against the Warriors to win seemed unlikely, because it was unlikely. But to come back and win by 12 when you're down 12, they erased a 12-point deficit and then won by 12 in a span of 12 minutes. They outscored them by 24 points in that 12-minute fourth quarter. And they got going right out of the jump. Steph Curry on the bench, which is maybe something Steve Kerr needs to adjust.
Oh, he's going to have to play like most of the games, like most minutes, yeah.
Some coaches get into such a habit in the regular season in the way that they handle star minutes. And so you see, and this is the way most coaches handle it in the regular season. You know, even at the, with the Grizzlies, like John Morant starts, and then he comes out late in the first quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And then he comes back in at some point in the second quarter. And then he plays the rest of the half. And then he starts the third quarter, and he comes out late in the third quarter. And then he sits out the first few minutes, maybe even like 5-6 minutes of the fourth quarter. That's excessive, but sometimes. And then comes back in and closes the game. But we've seen it over and over again in the playoffs, in the postseason. Coaches adjust on that. Like Jimmy Butler does not play every minute in a regular season game, ever, under no circumstances. But in an elimination game, in the playoffs, he was out there for 48 minutes. You know, we've seen Kevin Durant come out and start the fourth quarter. We've seen big-time stars play all 12 minutes of the fourth quarter. And I'm not saying Steve Kerr made a mistake to sit Steph Curry, because he understands his players and their bodies better than I do, but you probably got to get him out there a little early. How about this? Guarantee you Saturday night, Steph will be back in the game in the fourth quarter earlier than he was last night.
Yep.
Because with him on the bench, Boston came out and just started bombing. And they weren't bombing because Steph Curry was on the bench. I don't mean that. Like, it's not like Steph Curry would have prevented these three-pointers from happening. But when your star's on the bench, you can't bomb back as appropriately as you otherwise would. Boston made their first 7 three-pointers in the fourth quarter. Finished 9 of 12 from 3 in the fourth. And for the game, the Celtics were 21 of 41 from three. That's 51.2%. And what's wild about these numbers, because we haven't attached any names to them yet, it wasn't Jason Tatum.
And that's why I'd be feeling really good if I'm a Celtics fan.
That you just won this, and Jason Tatum gave you nothing.
Right.
3 of 17 from the field, 12 points. He did have 13 assists, which was a career high. And some of that was because his teammates were knocking down shots at an abnormal rate. The guys who killed them, it was Al Horford, 6 of 8 from three. Derek White, 5 of 8 from three. Marcus Smart, 4 of 7 from three. So those three guys combined to go 15 of 23 from three in the game. That's 65.2%. Do you see the quote from Draymond? He was post-game, and they always have box scores right in front of them. They can glance at, they can study it, they can do whatever they want to with it. But Draymond looked down and looked at those three names, Al Horford, Derek White, Marcus Smart. And he said, 15 of 23 from those guys? we'll be fine. His point,
maybe,
his point being, that's what it took for them to beat us. It took Al Horford going 6 of 8 from three, and Derek White going 5 of 8 from three, and Marcus Smart going 4 of 7 for three. That's not something they can replicate. That's a once in a lifetime thing. That's not something they bring him back in game two. Yep. And if that's what they had to do to beat us, then we're going to be fine. And perhaps he's right, or at the very least, I understand his point. But the other side of it is also true. You think Jason Tatum's going 3 of 17 again? I don't either.
No.
So you can look at it a couple of different ways. On one hand, if you want to be optimistic as a Golden State fan, it took ridiculous, abnormal shooting performances from three different Celtics for the Celtics to win game one on the road. If you want to be optimistic from a Boston perspective, you say, our star did nothing and we still beat them by double digits in game one on the road. You could slice it up either way. But just to highlight how unusual this shooting performance was from those three guys, I went and looked it up in the regular season and just pulled their per-game averages. Al Horford in the regular season shot 4.8 three-pointers per game on average and made 1.3. Again, last night he shot 8 and made 6. On average in the regular season, he shot 4.8 and made 1.3. Derek White in the regular season, on average, shot 4.3 per game, made 1.3. Last night, shot 8, made 5. Marcus Smart in the regular season, on average, shot 5.1 threes per game, made 1.7. Last night, shot 7, made 4. So they all shot more than they normally shoot, and they all made a better percentage, way better percentage, than they normally make. On the season, those three players, Al Horford, Derek White, Marcus Smart, per game, they average 4.3 makes on 14.2 attempts from three. That's 30.3%. Again, last night, they were 15 of 23. That's 65.2%. So they took 9 more combined, 9 more threes than they averaged per game in the regular season. And they shot from three 35% above their average. 35 percentage points above their average. And if you're trying to erase a double-digit deficit and jump to a 1-0 lead in the NBA Finals, that is obviously a great way to do it. This was also interesting. Before last night, Golden State was 9-0 at home in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Had not lost a game. But did you know what Boston's record was?
Oh, wasn't it better on the road?
Yeah, they're 7-2 7-2 in road games.
Yeah.
So they've been awesome on the road. They don't seem to get rattled in the ways that somebody else might get rattled. So they went into the Chase Center and they get out of there with game one. And now it's totally flipped. They are up 1-0. They have home court advantage. And they are now a bigger favorite to win this series today than the Warriors were this time yesterday. This time yesterday, the Warriors were minus 150 to win the series. Right now, Boston is minus 185 to win the series. Golden State, if you want to get them, you can get them at plus 155. And like I said earlier, Boston's now just 3 wins away from what would be an 18th NBA title. And that would break a tie that they have right now with the Los Angeles Lakers.
Yeah, I think, too, GP, like, the good thing about last night, the promise, and, like, look, the Warriors, they could come out on Sunday and just run them off the court, right? Like, they're capable of doing that. But I do think we're going to get a good series here. Like, I think that's the positive thing about last night. Like, after watching that game, this is going to be a high-level finals,
well,
I think.
Well, that was the other fun thing about last night is it wasn't just a game that flipped or a game that, you know, was competitive and tied in the fourth quarter, even though it didn't look that way when it started, and it didn't end that way.
Mm.
There was a moment in the fourth where we're tied. it wasn't just a close game. It was a fun game.
Yep.
Like, incredible shot making. We've talked about Boston 21 of 41 from three. Golden State was 19 of 45.
Yep.
And there were 43 pointers made in that game last night. 48 minute game. 43s made. So it was a fun game, like, entertaining game. And hopefully we'll get more of that on Saturday night. Dan Wolkin watched it, wrote about it. I'll talk to him next. You listening? Gary Parrish Show. We're on 92.9 FM ESPN.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline, live from the Service Master by Cornerstone Studios. We don't pray for disaster. We just pray we get called when there is one. At Service Master by Cornerstone. Now back to the Gary Parrish Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Run. Here come the menaces to sobriety, like what? Super thug is thumping on the cut.
Weighs a ton, hit the drum till you hear it go.
According to court documents, Cleveland quarterback Deshaun Watson offered $100,000 to 22 different women to try to settle civil suits with non-disclosure agreements. 18 of the women agreed to do it. 4 of the women did not, so none of it went through. And that's why Deshaun Watson is still dealing with these civil suits. NFL continues to investigate. We'll get into that story in the next segment. Jeff Coggins will be here a little after 5 o'clock, but right now he's a national columnist. USA Today, it's Dan Wolkin making the big interview.
Award-winning writers, athletes, coaches, the biggest names in sports. It's the Gary Parrish Show Big Interview, presented by The Wing Guru, online at thewingguru.com.
So you wrote a column after last night's Game 1 NBA Finals. Boston down 12 going into the fourth. Win the game by 12. It's the most lopsided fourth quarter in NBA Finals history. What do you make of what we saw last night at the Chase Center?
Well, I certainly make of it that Boston's in great position to win the NBA championship. I think that when you start to look at the matchups up and down, the lineup, and the way that the Celtics can kind of switch defensively. They've got all that length on the perimeter with the wings that can guard Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and the Warriors. You know, they probably lack a little bit of shooting when Draymond Green and Kevon Looney are playing together, which is the lineup that did well for them in the last two series. I think the Warriors are in a little bit of trouble. Now, I don't think that Boston's necessarily going to shoot the way they did in that game. It was an unbelievable performance. You don't expect to get, you know, Al Horford and Derek White and Marcus Smart. I think they were, whatever they were, like 13 for 18 or 16 for 20 combined, something like that. That's not going to happen again. But, you know, I just do think that you can kind of look back on it, and the East was really tough this year. I mean, the East was way better than the West. Boston, you know, was in some real battles all throughout the playoffs. I mean, they understand kind of what it takes, and they've got a team that's good enough to win different ways. So it's not over, and certainly I can't put it past Golden State to come back and win the series. But I really like Boston and where they're positioned right now.
You had an interesting column, USAtoday.com, that I read earlier today, sort of pointing out that this Warriors franchise is a modern-day dynasty. You know, they have won three titles, but only one of them came without Kevin Durant. And if they don't win this series, another series where they were favored to win, it really starts to, you know, shine a light on them in a different way. You know, people love to bang on LeBron, as you point out in the column, for having a 4-6 record in the NBA Finals, but he's only lost one series he was supposed to win. That was the Heat-Mavericks season series when Dirk led Dallas to a title. The Warriors have been favored to win some of these series that they've lost. In this one, they're not favored anymore, but heading into game one, they were. How important is it for the legacy of the Durant-less Golden State Warriors to actually pull out of this and win this series?
Yeah, and, you know, typically I'm not one who loves legacy talk and, you know, getting involved in all of that stuff, because I think generally it's pretty silly for the most part. And, you know, I don't think, like, people talk about Steph Curry doesn't have a finals MVP. Does that take away from his legacy? No, of course not. I mean, that's ridiculous. But I do think this is a unique situation, because with the Warriors, you got two very distinct versions of the team. You've got the Kevin Durant Warriors, and then you've got the non-Kevin Durant Warriors. You just have not had in the history of the NBA very often a player of Durant's stature come in to join a championship-level team and then leave. And we have sort of this mounting body of evidence about, you know, kind of where it all fits together. And, you know, they were up 3-1 against the Cavs. They lost that one. They were, favored to beat the Raptors. Kevin Durant was with the team but couldn't play because he was injured until he tried to come back in Game 5 and tore his knee. And that was really unfortunate, but you know, this would be, if they lose this series, 1-3 in the NBA Finals, played without Kevin Durant, and 2-0 with Durant. That does complicate things. I mean, I just think in terms of how we talk about what this Warriors run and dynasty looks like and where it fits historically and all that stuff that maybe some people don't care about, but I do think is interesting. It's fair to say, you know, how good were they really, but, you know, without Kevin Durant, is the Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green nucleus, you know, one of the all-time teams? And I do think a loss in the finals here would make that an interesting discussion.
Talking to Dan Wolkin from USA Today. When you watch the KD era in Brooklyn not go well for a variety of reasons, a lot of them tied to Kyrie Irving, and you watch the Warriors, yes, back in the finals, which is incredible, but now an underdog in a series they were favored to win in the NBA Finals, people start to say things like, why couldn't they stay together? Why, you know, did everybody really think they'd be better off without each other? Because it doesn't look like either side is better without each other. Is that a valid point? Or ultimately, everybody got what they wanted, and even if the basketball isn't as good, Kevin didn't want to be in the Bay Area anymore, and the Warriors, I promise you, Steph would like to prove they can do this, you know, in the post-Kevin Durant time.
Yeah, I don't know what's really in Kevin Durant's mind and everything that motivates him, but, you know, it certainly seemed like, for whatever reason, he was just ready to move on. He was just done with the whole idea of playing with that team, and certainly it was his right to do that. He wasn't contractually obligated to play there anymore, and you know, maybe some of that was the injury too. He just kind of wanted a fresh start. And so, you know, you can get into all the counterfactuals about, you know, what would have been better for him or what would have been better for the Warriors, but you know, everything that's happened since he left Golden State's kind of been weird too, and maybe some things out of his control. You know, they had Kyrie Irving. They ended up getting James Harden, and you know, and that didn't work all that well. And then that had to be broken up, and then COVID, and Kyrie Irving sort of going off the reservation a little bit. So all these things that maybe have happened to Durant that have prevented him from getting back to the NBA Finals are, you know, maybe a little bit fluky and unfortunate. I don't know if he would do it over again if he had the opportunity, you know, but the Warriors have done their best to try to reinvent themselves, and I think they've mostly done a pretty good job, although I do think the James Wiseman thing was a major miss that could haunt them for a while. But, you know, again, I mean, if they win the finals, all this stuff is moot. But now that they're down 1-0, and it certainly looks like they've got some issues personnel-wise in this series, it's definitely you can go back and sort of question everything. That's just kind of what we do.
Talking to Dan Wolkin from USA Today. Switching gears, the interesting story earlier this week that had Ohio State Athletic Director Gene Smith and football coach Ryan Day reportedly meeting with like 100 business leaders in the Columbus, Ohio area, at which point Ryan Day sort of made it clear to them, if you guys want us to keep our roster looking the way our roster has looked, we've got a number, and it looks like it's about $13 million per year. He said, the truth is, these days, you sit down with a high-profile quarterback, those guys are worth about $2 million a year. You want an edge rusher, those guys are worth about $1 million a year. What did you make of Ryan Day being so candid and upfront about how much money is now influencing which student-athletes play where?
Well, I just probably tend to believe them because they've been in this now for a year, and they've seen what has happened in the recruiting space, not just with them, but with the teams that they compete against for players and what certain players are accepting and what it takes. So, you know, maybe he's overstating it a little bit, but that's not a number that seems outlandish to me. It doesn't mean that everyone is getting the exact same amount of money. It's one of those things you have to, you know, pick your spots well and give the right money to the right people. That's the trickiest part, I think, of the whole thing. And, you know, I'm sure that every athletic department, every football staff in America is doing that and running those numbers to try to maximize what they can do with NIL. But I think mainly if that's the number, then I actually think, why not just have the athletic department pay that? I mean, all these athletic departments in the Power Five can access $13 million. Like, why do they need to rely on donors to pay that kind of money? You know, not that it's an insignificant number, but when you're talking about some of these athletic departments have budgets of $130, $150 million, well, okay, if 10% of that or 8% of that is going to, you know, football player procurement, then I still think that's a bargain for the schools. I mean, just based on how much money football brings in.
I saw somebody joke on Twitter recently that men's basketball programs and football programs are soon going to have general managers. I don't know that anybody on staff will actually be called that, but could you envision a college football program or college basketball program hiring somebody who, you know, is basically in charge of you know, helping create a roster and figuring out what type of money needs to go where? Could you envision a general manager at the collegiate level?
Well, I'll go one step further. I think it would be dumb not to have one.
There you go.
And the reason I say that is because, look, if this is going to be, you know, more of a business type of arrangement, you know, rather than the whole thing about, I need to play for a coach who's, you know, a father figure or, you know, whatever reason somebody's attracted to a particular coach, and this is just more about a straight business deal, well, then you need somebody involved in that who's not coaching the player who can be involved in or be the lead person in doing all the negotiating. I mean, it's why generally at the pro level we've not seen coaches be very good general managers, or why that's a thing that doesn't happen as much anymore. You kind of want, in an ideal world, that wall to exist between player personnel and the coaching side. So, yeah, like I think all college staffs should have that position now ready to go dealing with the NIL, dealing with the boosters who are going to have to make this stuff happen, dealing with the parents and the agents, and leaving the coach to, you know, certainly have a role in evaluating who they want and all that stuff, but to generally leave them out of the negotiating process, so to speak.
At the French Open, Coco Gauff going to play for her first Grand Slam title. She's in her first Grand Slam final tomorrow morning. I realize she's an underdog. Do you give her a reasonable shot to win it?
Yeah. She's got a shot to win it because she moves extremely well. She's going to be able to do things defensively that a lot of the other players cannot do against Iga Swiatek, who's number one in the world, is on a 34-match winning streak, and you know, he's just really been awesome this year, and has won the French Open before. She's definitely the favorite to win this thing, but you know, Coco is not going to have the pressure on her to win this one. It's all going to be on Swiatek, and I think that may be part of the story as well. You know, Coco seems to be in a really good frame of mind. She's playing good tennis. She's just very mature. She's 18, but she's mature. And I think just everything that's happened these last couple of weeks is great stuff for her and her future. Even if she does not win tomorrow, I think it puts her on a trajectory that has kind of been building for the last couple of years. She's steadily improved. She's gotten her ranking up. I mean, she's doing this all in the right amount of time, I think, and tomorrow's another step for her. I hope she wins. I think it'd be an awesome story. But if she doesn't, I don't think it's a big deal at all.
Wrapping up here with Dan Wolkin from USA Today. Last thing before I let you go, I saw you tweet earlier that the women's singles entry list has been published for Wimbledon. Serena Williams is not on the list. You wrote the following, that it seems very much in play now that she's just done, but will not announce it. Have we seen Serena Williams play tennis, you know, competitively for the last time?
I mean, there's certainly a good chance of it. You know, she has not really made any announcement or even hinted at anything really in a serious way. Her and Venus really have just kind of disappeared, at least in terms of the tennis part of their lives. Now, they're visible in all these other ways. I mean, Serena's, you know, besides the movie which they made, Serena's, you know, at all these big events. I just saw she was at this Bitcoin conference and, you know, all this other stuff. Like, she's around, she's not hiding, but there's not been very much, at least on her social media and whatever else, to suggest that she's like doing a lot of tennis practicing or anything like that, that she's like getting ready for this big comeback. It just seems like she's kind of living life. And you would have thought if she was going to come back at any point, that Wimbledon would have been the place for her to come back, because she's won that tournament a bunch of times. It's certainly the place that she would have the best chance to win. You know, it's just kind of makes sense that she'd want to play there one more time. But her not being on that entry list, I don't know what to make of it other than she's just going to kind of fade away. Like, she's not going to do some big retirement tour. She's not going to, you know, make a big scene out of, you know, this is my farewell. She's just going to kind of disappear. I mean, maybe I'll be proven wrong and she'll play the U.S. Open, but certainly seems like she's just done to me.
That is Dan Wolkin from USA Today. The column is, if the Warriors can't beat Celtics in NBA Finals, they'll be haunted by Kevin Durant's ghost. You can find it right now at usatoday.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Dan Wolkin. Thanks, buddy. Have a great weekend.
See ya.
Bye-bye. That's Dan Wolkin from USA Today. When we come back, according to court documents, Cleveland quarterback Deshaun Watson offered $100,000 to all 22 women last October who have filed civil suits against him. They had to all accept it for the deal to go through. Four of them did not, so the deal did not go through. Meantime, Deshaun Watson's attorneys went on sports radio this morning in Houston. Had a wild quote. I'll share it with you next. You're listening to the Gary Parrish Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline, live from the Service Master by Cornerstone Studios. We don't pray for disaster. We just pray we get called when there is one. At Service Master by Cornerstone.
Okay, now back to the Gary Parrish Show
on 92.9 FM ESPN.
You the type to play the joke and try to hide your hand. Not the type to come around and try to play your friend.
You the type to cut the grass and snake your bestest man. I'm the type to close the deal and cut my then. See me in person, I look like a ghost. See me in person, I look like a ghost. Boom. You wanna come in and play with the goat? Boom. You wanna come in and play with the goat?
Goat body.
All you rap sound like me. Can't tell who is who. You got no real identity. Can't tell you from you. Price went up.
Yeah.
Angel investor.
Yeah.
Price went up. Angel
okay,
investor.
Okay.
I'm not okay.
Not okay.
Think you're good. It's not okay.
Are you looking for auto insurance, homeowners insurance, life insurance, business insurance? If so, get in touch with Elizabeth Rook Insurance. There's a second-generation local agency been owned and operated since 1981. If you live in Tennessee or Mississippi, Elizabeth can help you. She's a proud partner with Memphis Tigers Athletics. So if you want to support a local business that supports the local athletic department, then Elizabeth Rook Insurance, that's the business for you. Let's talk about life insurance for a moment. Do you have a good policy? Do you have one at all? If not, you need to fix that, because you wouldn't want something to happen to you unexpectedly and then you leave your family in a financial bind. Unfortunately, it happens to families every single day in this country, but it doesn't have to. It's avoidable and it's affordable. So if you need a life insurance policy, get in touch with Elizabeth Rook Insurance. Two locations in the Memphis area, one in Lakeland, the other in Covington. You can reach them at 867-SAVE, 901-867-7283. It's Elizabeth Rook Insurance on the web, rookinsurance.com. Jeff Cogg is going to join me a little after 5 o'clock, but right now I got four stories I'd like to discuss.
Four notable stories at 444. Gary tends to lose focus, start telling stories, and forget what he wanted to talk about at certain points every afternoon. So we've developed a device that ensures he'll touch on important things you need to know each day at this time. This is GP's Four Notable Stories at 444. Story number one.
Deshaun Watson's attorneys went on Sports Radio 610 in Houston this morning for an extended interview to answer a lot of questions. And Rusty Harden, boy, he had a wild thing to say on the radio.
What'd he say?
Did you see the quote?
No.
Oh, wow. So he was talking about this. As you know Deshaun Watson, right?
I'm familiar.
Quarterback, yes. He was with the Texans.
Yep.
And then he allegedly started sexually assaulting or being inappropriately sexually with, like, all sorts of different massage therapists. So the Texans were like, well, you can't play for us anymore. But the Browns were like, you can play for us. We hate Baker Mayfield. And so Cleveland did a trade for him, and they gave him a raise and a long-term deal. And now the NFL is investigating to see what Deshaun Watson did and did not do, and whether he did something that he needs to be punished for. That's sort of where we're at with this story. He had 23 different women file civil lawsuits against him, every woman alleging some sort of inappropriate behavior. So Rusty Harden goes on radio this morning, and among other things, here's what he said, quote, I don't know how many men are out there now that have had a massage that perhaps occasionally there was a happy ending. Maybe there's nobody in your listening audience that ever happened to. But I do want to point out, if it has happened, it's not a crime, okay? Unless you're paying somebody extra to give you some type of sexual activity, it's not a crime. Doing something or saying something or being a way that makes you uncomfortable is not a crime.
Wow. That's a quote.
It appears they've given up on the, our client wasn't doing what 23 different women have said he was doing. Because they know
you can't win with that.
Nobody buys that.
Right.
If 23 people stand up and say you did more or less the same thing to me that you did to these other women, nobody's buying that. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got to be a real, real goofy person to think Deshaun Watson wasn't being a creepo with these massage therapists for reasons that we've discussed 1,000 times. So his attorney's new strategy is to say, all right, was our guy going through Instagram, finding massage therapists, direct messaging them, setting up private appointments, and then trying to get happy endings? Okay, yeah. Yeah. But that's not a crime.
I just don't think that's going to hold up in the court of law.
Well, the problem, of course, is that, and Rusty Harden's a smart guy, smarter than I am, but yeah, it's not a crime if, and please forgive me, this could be the part of the show where maybe you put your ears, hands over your kids' ears, But it's not a crime if the massage therapist initiates something that she can tell you're into and you are into it and it just works itself out, right? I guess that's not a crime. But if the massage therapist is there purely for professional reasons and under professional pretenses, and you suddenly pull out your dingling and place it on her, and that is not what she wants at all, that is actually sexual assault. That is a crime. You can't just put your dingling on anybody.
Yeah.
Unless I read the law the wrong way.
Dude, I can't believe he said that.
If put your dingling just on random people isn't against the law, then wish somebody would have told me that a long time ago. You know, I've been assuming this whole time you can't do that.
Yeah.
I've just been under the assumption you can't do that. Otherwise, there's no telling what I'd have done. I'm joking. I would not have done that. Not often, at least.
Yeah.
But I've always
assumed. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. But I've always just assumed that's against the law. You can't put your dingling on random people. But Rusty Hart is saying it's not against the law. I think he's wrong. I mean, who am I to argue with an attorney? But I think he's fundamentally wrong. I think some of the things Deshaun Watson has been accused of, absolutely against the law. So here's this other part of the story that comes out. Last October, Deshaun Watson's attorneys offered, at the time, there were 22 women who had accused him of sexual misconduct. The number is now 23, but at the time it was 22. And the Miami Dolphins were reportedly wanted to trade for Deshaun Watson, but they didn't want to do it with these civil cases still out there. They just said, that's a non-starter for us. You got to have all this stuff cleaned up, gone. It's got to be over, and then we'll do the deal. But as long as it's lingering, we can't do the deal. So with this in mind, Deshaun Watson's attorneys reached out to all 22 women, and who were, by the way, all represented by the same attorney. One attorney represents all of them. So they reach out to the attorney, and they say, listen, we will offer $100,000 to every woman, all 22. But they have to sign very tight non-disclosure agreements, and then this has to be over. It's just over. And the way it was presented to the women was, you can all do whatever you want, but for this to go through, all 22 of you have to agree to it and sign the non-disclosure agreements. Because from Deshaun Watson's perspective, it's 22 or nothing. The Dolphins need all of this to go away. So if you ain't got all 22 gone, it doesn't do any good to have 18 of these gone, because you still got four. And if you still got four, the Dolphins aren't trading for you. So the only way you can get this behind you is you got to get all 22 women to say, okay, we'll take the deal. 18 of the women said they would. Give me $100,000, I'll sign the non-disclosure, we're done. But four women said, absolutely not, not doing it. And so the deal just fell apart. So now he's sitting here with 23 civil suits. And as I saw a piece by Mike Florio earlier today, Pro Football Talk, you know, as he points out, you know, you talk to anybody. This is all stuff we've talked. It's common sense. We've talked about it before. But he says you talk to, you know, anybody who works in the NFL. There's no way a franchise quarterback is just plain and simple. A franchise quarterback would never be getting random massages from random people of different levels of expertise. You know, a massage therapist can actually mess you up as well. And so as Florio points out, any franchise quarterback in the NFL who actually needs massages every day for legitimate sports reasons, you're going to have one person probably employed by the franchise, and you're locked into that one person. That's who you work with every day. There's no legitimate reason to be reaching out to 23 different women via Instagram unless you're scheduling these massages with the hope, if not intent, of it ending in ways that legitimate massages are not supposed to end. And so you fast forward to Rusty Harden this morning on radio, and he's basically saying, hey, listen, it's not a crime for a massage to end in this way. And I guess that's technically true, I guess. But that's not the only thing Deshaun Watson has been accused of. None of these civil cases are tied to Deshaun Watson got a happy ending. That's not it. These are tied to Deshaun Watson hired me to give him a massage. I'm a professional massage therapist. I thought I was there for professional reasons, and then I found myself being sexually assaulted. So they're telling part of the story, but not the entire story. And I think the most recent comments from the NFL were the investigative part of this is coming to an end, and then they'll levy some punishment if they decide to levy punishment at all. But I can't imagine your attorneys going on Sports Talk Radio this morning in Houston and trying to sell it the way they tried to sell it. I don't think that was a move in the right direction.
Story number two.
The Philadelphia Phillies have fired Joe Girardi. Just a few games into his third season with the franchise, they've been not good this season, 22-29. One of the reasons the Mets have like a 10-game lead in the NL East is because nobody else in the NL East has been any good this season. And Girardi pays the price for that today, getting fired. Joe Sheehan, who, of course, longtime smart baseball writer, wrote a piece about it at joesheehan.com earlier today. And, you know, I'll trust him on this more than I trust myself because I've always thought Joe Girardi's a good manager. You know, the best, maybe not the best, but, like, good. I mean, he won a World Series with the Yankees.
Yep.
And Joe Sheehan wrote a column basically saying this is not on Joe Girardi. This is on the front office who have given him a terrible roster to work with. Like, they've got some big things like Bryce Harper, JT Realmuto. But they're so flawed. They don't play defense. The pitching is flawed. And well, I'll just read you exactly what Joe Sheehan wrote. He wrote, "The front office set the tone for what the Phillies are. A mishapen team that doesn't play defense, doesn't hit enough to make up for that fact, and doesn't have nearly enough homegrown talent as a base to support the expensive additions. Girardi isn't the problem. He's the guy who showed up on Chopped and was handed two old tires, a can of Jolt Cola, and some stale rhubarb and asked to make Thanksgiving dinner." It is interesting that the guy Joe Girardi replaced, Gabe Kapler, the Phillies fired him too. After 2 years, and he is right now the manager of the San Francisco Giants. He's the reigning National League manager of the year. So the Phillies at some point probably need to look in the mirror. Are we really just hiring bad managers?
Yeah.
Because we've had the former AL manager of the year. We fired that guy. And we had a future NL manager of the year. We fired that guy. Maybe the problem isn't our managers. Maybe it's the people who are putting the rosters together.
Story number three.
It's always something, Big Bad Bennett.
What's up?
Francisco Lindor slammed his finger closing the door yesterday and missed last night's series opener for the Mets against the Los Angeles Dodgers. He said, "The last time I pinched my finger before today, I was 12 years old." So, as Francisco Lindor, who's been awesome this season, is telling the story last night before the game, he had gotten a massage, hopefully a legitimate one.
Yeah.
If I lose Francisco Lindor.
Yeah, you careful.
I don't know if I can take that. So let's just hope it was a legitimate massage. And he went back up to his room, and he had double doors. Like, it's probably a suite, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's got double doors, separating one part of the room to the other. And he went to close one of the doors, and the other one was already closed, and his finger got caught right in the middle. And it happens.
Yeah, I feel like I do that like once every couple months.
Yeah, but you don't have to turn double plays.
It's true.
Like, I believe it's the right hand. He can't grip up. He could not hold a baseball properly.
My fingers don't matter as much as his fingers. It's true.
Your fingers don't matter as much as his fingers, Bennett.
No.
I mean, listen, with all due respect to your fingers,
I know.
I'm sure they serve a purpose, but they're not worth $300 million.
I don't know if I could run this soundboard without my fingers, so... But
Your fingers are not worth $300 million.
No.
Whatever your fingers are worth, it's something less than Francisco Lindor's $330 million fingers.
Probably true.
I would give Francisco Lindor one of my fingers.
I don't think it would work.
I don't need all these fingers.
Yeah, but he's got special fingers. Your finger's not going to help him.
I got little bitty fingers.
Yeah, it's not going to help him.
What are my fingers doing?
Yeah.
You know? Who would even want my fingers?
I mean, your fingers look normal to me.
They're little fingers.
You got little fingers? You got little Trump hands?
I got Trump hands.
Oh, GP.
I do. Look.
Oh, y'all look. Have to compare hands when he comes to town.
Although, remember when we were comparing hand sizes?
Yeah. Yours was normal.
During the NFL Combine.
Yeah. Yours were regular.
I think bigger than the Pitt quarterbacks.
Oh, that's right. They were.
Kenny Pickett.
Because we did the measurement thing. There's something we did. I don't remember what it was. But
So I had forgot that it happened because I spent most of my adult life like just being embarrassed about my little Trump hands. But it turned out I got Kenny Pickett hands.
Which, hey, he's a might be a starting quarterback in the NFL.
I have the hands of a starting quarterback in the NFL. Are they Josh Allen's hands? No. But they're Kenny Pickett's hands.
Yep.
I've always looked at my hands and said, "There's no way I could be an NFL quarterback." And now I'm not sure of that anymore.
It's possible.
Either way, I feel if I told Francisco Lindor he could have my hands, one of my fingers, he'd be like, "I don't want that." He'd be like, "Let me see it." And then I show it to him, he'd be like, "I don't need that finger. Finger's ridiculous. I can't turn double plays with that finger."
Yeah.
So we wait to see if he's going to be in the lineup tonight. Mets lost 2-0 last night. Ain't nothing worse, Big Ben Bennington, staying up to midnight.
You got a nice little cushion.
Ain't nothing worse than staying up to midnight watching a 2-0 baseball game when your team's got the nothing.
Yeah, that's tough.
I'll try it again tonight, though.
Story number 4.
Amber Heard's attorney went on television this morning, and she was asked point blank by Savannah Guthrie, hard-hitting interviewer. I like Savannah Guthrie.
I like Savannah, too.
Like, didn't Matt Lauer get her kicked off of the Today Show or something? I feel like that happened.
Yeah.
Like, Matt Lauer hated her, and we were like, well, if Matt Lauer hates her, then she must be a B.I. something, something, something. And it turns out Matt Lauer's a creepo.
Yeah.
So I decided at that point, yeah. I'm gonna like Savannah Guthrie.
Yeah, I like her too. She's good.
Yeah, so Savannah Guthrie was talking to Amber Heard's attorney this morning, and she said, hey, listen, so Amber now owes Johnny Depp. I know you're appealing, but she owes Johnny Depp like $8 million. Can she pay that? You know what the attorney said?
No.
Oh, no, absolutely not.
Dang, she didn't have $8 million?
I told you I didn't think she had.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.